Good morning, Your Honors.
Yes, you would.
Yes. You have my name. I represent the appellant, Mary Redmond, and the issue before this court is, in this Hague Convention case, did the district court improperly base its decision on a custody order of the Irish court and not assess Derek Redmond's Hague Convention petition correctly?
We may have an antecedent issue. I take it that JMR is now in Ireland. That's
correct.
Okay. That raises the question whether this appeal is moot. The 11th Circuit held that a Hague Convention case becomes moot when the child leaves the United States. The Supreme Court has granted certiorari in Chafin against Chafin. And mootness is an Article III question that affects the jurisdiction of the federal courts, and we're obliged to consider it before any other issue. I'm, let's say, a little surprised that neither side has called into question whether we have a case or controversy under Article III of the Constitution. So is this case moot?
I do not believe it is. The Hague Convention itself and its enabling legislation, the International Child Abduction Remedies Act, makes no concession to the fact that a case may be moot if a child is sent back. And
it doesn't matter what the legislation says. Mootness is a constitutional question, not a statutory question.
But I think
the legislation might matter if there is a provision in the convention or the implementing legislation allowing a U.S. court to order the child's return, even from a foreign country. Is there such a provision?
The child is to be returned if the elements of the Hague Convention case are not met
Counsel, I'm asking a concrete question about the contents of the treaty and the implementing legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything in either the treaty or the legislation saying that the court has the power to order the child's return after he is in a different country?
Specifically, no.
Okay.
However.
Well, then how should we proceed? It's obvious that we'll need supplemental memos from the parties on the mootness question. And one of the further questions, I shouldn't ask you to address this now, but we will be calling for supplemental memos from the parties. And there are two questions, I think. One is whether the fact that JMR is now in Ireland makes this case moot. I assume that that will be decided one way or another by the Supreme Court in Chafin. The second question is whether we should therefore wait before we do anything in this case until Chafin has been decided. But I won't tax you now with either of those questions. I will let you get on with the merits. But I will hope the memos will address both of those questions.
Okay. So you're wanting to proceed?
Please.
Now. Okay. As you are aware, the Hague Convention and its enabling legislation are really powerful tools to secure the return of children taken out of a country of habitual residence. But because they are so powerful, their rules must be followed exactly. And the petitioner under a Hague Convention, in a Hague Convention case, has to present evidence to make out a prima facie case under Article 3 of the Convention. And those three elements are, what is the child's habitual residence? At the time of the removal or retention, did the left-behind parent have rights of custody that were breached? And third, was that parent exercising custodial rights at the time of the removal or retention, or would he have been doing so but for the removal? Now, of these three elements, the key one is the place, the country of habitual residence, because that element controls the second and the third parts of the prima facie case, because it is the law of the place of habitual residence that controls whether or not the parents of the child have custodial rights or do not have custodial rights. So to begin with, we have to look at the date of the alleged wrongful removal or retention. Now, Mr. Redmond claims that the wrongful retention occurred on March 30th or April 1st of 2011, which is the date that Mary Redmond did not return to Ireland as ordered following the conclusion of the Irish custody case. So we have to look and see on that date where was Jack, where was the child's habitual residence. Now, habitual residence is essentially a fact-based
inquiry. Why is that the right date?
Well, I'm just saying if we're looking at the date that the district court determined was the date of the wrongful retention.
Right. I question whether that's legally the right focus under the Hague Convention's language. We don't evaluate whether there's been a wrongful removal or retention based on a change in legal circumstances. And that's what the district court was doing here. The district court, it seems to me, used that 2011 date, the later date, mm-hmm. Because that's when the father's legal rights as to this child were adjudicated in his favor.
Well, that's correct.
And that can't possibly be what the removal or retention language in the Hague Convention is keyed to. That's the a second question about whether the removal is wrongful. But the removal or retention refers to one parent absconding somewhere or keeping the child in a non-habitual country of residence.
You have hit upon exactly one of the problems because Mr. Redmond had no parental or custodial rights until the Irish court awarded him those rights in February of 2011. So our argument has always been that the date that the court had to focus on in terms of removing the child from Ireland was November of 2007, which is the date at which Mary Redmond, as the mother, brought the child from Ireland to the United States. Now, then that is the date at which you look at, was that removal from Ireland wrongful? And it's wrongful if it is in breach of the custody rights of the father. In November of 2007, Mr. Redmond had not only no custodial rights, he had no parental rights at all, because under Irish law, because he and Mary Redmond were never married, he had no rights as a father. He was not deemed to be a father, nor was he deemed to be a parent until the court awarded him those rights in 2011. Now, if he didn't have any custodial rights in November of 2007, then nothing that Mary did in terms of taking the child from Ireland to the United States could have breached those rights because he didn't have any rights to breach. Now, the district court, instead of focusing on the date when the child was permanently taken from Ireland to the United States, focused instead on a custody case that was subsequently filed and proceeded in Ireland. And it wasn't only a custody case. It was a case to have Derek Redmond's parental rights established. Now, under the Irish Guardianship of Infants Act, an unwed father has no rights in the child until the court grants him those rights.
Given that both the courts of Ireland and the courts of Illinois have decided that the child belongs in Ireland, why can't that be enforced directly in this federal case? Diversity of citizenship is established.
Because the Hague Convention says that under Article 17...
I'm not asking about the Hague Convention. I'm asking about what used to be called ancillary jurisdiction and is now called the supplemental jurisdiction. When the suit is properly in federal court under a federal statute, relief can be granted under state law. Here, one might think, the state law applicable is the law of Illinois, which has enforced the Irish decree. Why isn't that a perfectly straightforward ground to affirm the judgment in this case?
Because the only basis that the state court did not grant custody rights itself was because of the UCCJEA. and the fact that Mary had not been in Illinois for 6 months prior to her filing of the custody action.
I don't see why that matters. We still have decrees of two courts, one in Ireland and one in Illinois, both saying that the minor belongs in Ireland. And it does seem to me possible for the federal court under the supplemental jurisdiction to just entirely bypass the Hague Convention.
Your Honor, with the state court in Illinois did not rule that the child belongs in Ireland. All it ruled was it did not have jurisdiction to make any custody ruling. That was the limit of its ruling. That case came up on her custody pleading and a motion to strike and dismiss on the grounds of the UCCJEA. That's all the court has ruled on. He didn't rule that the Irish order should be enforced. He didn't rule that the child should be sent back. He didn't rule that Mary needed to go back. All he ruled was that Illinois had no jurisdiction. And I think that's a significant difference to the situation that you're describing, where this court has said that the child should go back. That did not happen.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
David Schaefer on behalf of Schaefer. On behalf of Derek Redman, if it please the court. Your Honor, first of all, based on Justice Brandeis's authority in a 1924 case as appellee, I also add the additional argument at this time that the issue is moot and or the court should wait until ruling in the U.S. Supreme Court on the mootness issue.
Do you have any particular reasons for saying it's moot? I find it odd that you would suddenly espouse this. Lawyers have an obligation to address jurisdiction in their briefs. Neither side says boo about mootness, though it's an obvious problem. And now you get to your feet and say, oh, well, it's moot. Now, that suggests that you have, well, failed in your professional obligations to this court.
I researched that, Your Honor, and this was before the U.S. Supreme Court took it on. The leaning toward
this. Why didn't you, in your brief, give us the benefits of your research? As I say, lawyers have a professional obligation to address the jurisdiction of the federal courts. To say, I researched it, and then I decided to hope you wouldn't notice it, is not a responsible position.
I apologize, Your Honor. The state court specifically said, the Illinois state court specifically said that the case belongs in Ireland. The state courts in Illinois specifically said that this case does not belong here in Illinois. And we need to refocus on what is the habitual residence, and was Judge Norgel clearly erroneous in his findings? His findings included that Ms. Redman concealed in January 2009 that the Irish courts had jurisdiction to hear Mr. Redman's custody application. The findings of fact were from his birth until November 2007. JMR lived with both of his parents in Ireland during this time. Mr. and Ms. Redman shared the intent that JMR be raised in Ireland and that Mr. Redman has never failed and changed his opinion that the child should be raised in Ireland. If the child were born in Ireland, Ms. Seaworth may have some argument here. The child was born in Illinois. By law in Illinois, they signed a voluntary acknowledgement of paternity, which gave the father, my client, as much rights as if this child were born to a married couple. He had rights. At that time, before they left for Ireland, they decided the child would go back to Ireland and be raised in Ireland.
Why didn't he file his Hague Convention petition immediately after Mary's removal of the child to the United States?
He did what was appropriate. He filed within 6 months, as required by the UCCJEA, as recognized by the state court. He filed within six months.
Could you explain that mysterious acronym? We are not domestic relations lawyers.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. The Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction and Enforcement Act. It is what all courts do in terms of if they're going to give full faith and credit to a custody judgment from another jurisdiction or another country.
Right. It's a jurisdiction allocation and right. full faith and credit statute. The Hague Convention is an anti-abduction statute
right.
or anti-abduction treaty as implemented by domestic law.
Correct.
And my question was, why didn't your client file a Hague Convention petition for return of the child immediately after Mary brought him to the United States?
Because he went the normal route of filing a custody.
The normal route would be to file for his custody rights
correct.
Domestically and also file a Hague Convention petition for return of the child.
Well, the Hague petition is an extreme last resort remedy. He was lulled into thinking, with Mary participating in the proceedings, he was going the normal route. Within 6 months, the child had lived more than 6 months in Ireland, as both courts found. He filed there for a custody petition.
So Mary, you're acknowledging that he had that option immediately after?
No, he did not have that option.
He did not have the option of filing a Hague petition here once he discovered that they were here?
No, not until he was awarded custody rights. Until he was awarded custody rights in Ireland.
Well, you've just made the argument that he had full parental rights under domestic American law, the law of Illinois.
He did. What all the cases look at for very young children in determining habitual residence is where is the last place the parties jointly had a joint.
That's a different question.
But that's where.
That's a totally different question. So did he or did he not have the option of filing a Hague petition immediately after the child was removed from Ireland?
No.
Because?
Because in Ireland, he did not have custodial rights at
okay.
that time.
Okay. So the removal of the child was perfectly lawful under anybody's law.
It was a temporary removal. The child came back.
That's a separate question.
Yes.
All we're dealing
yes.
with in the Hague Convention is wrongful
right.
removal or retention. So
right.
the removal was lawful.
Yes.
So this is an unlawful retention case.
Yes.
And you're claiming, and the district court agreed with you, that the child's residence here was not wrongful for the 3 or 4 years that this litigation in Ireland was proceeding, and it became unlawful upon the final adjudication of his parental rights by the Irish court. And why is that a proper interpretation of what it means to unlawfully retain a child under the
Because
Hague
until
Convention?
Then, if a party takes another child out of the country, that doesn't automatically involve the Hague. Once that party retains that child against a valid custody order.
Removal or retention have a physical geographic connotation. It's not just a
right.
change in one parent's legal status.
If I'm going on vacation with my family.
Right. This was not a vacation.
No,
the
but
child
I'm saying,
had been here for 3 or 4 years at this point.
He'd been in Ireland 40% of the time during the proceedings. The court made the finding that he'd been going back and forth 10.5 weeks. The object is not for a party to be able to come to another country and then participate
ten and a half
in Ireland.
Weeks out of 3+ years
yes.
of the child's life.
Yes.
Was spent in Ireland.
Yes. In a very young child, it's not the child who decides its habitual residence. It's
right.
where
that construct doesn't really apply well when you've got a disagreement among the parents here, which is what we've got.
Well, that's
so we
what,
have to look at
correct.
Habitual residence in a common sense way, as the cases explain. It's not a defined term under the treaty.
No, it is not.
And by any common sense definition, this child's habitual residence is the United States because for 3+ years, more than that, up until the child's removal in July, according to the order of the district court, the child lived here.
And according
10.5 weeks in Ireland, all the rest of that time in the United
it's
States.
It's not the time period, and according to Judge Norgal's findings, that the being here is temporary. What I was trying to say is if I take a vacation, an extended
right, this is not analogous to
I'm
a vacation.
I'm removing my children to whatever.
Right, that's a removal. What we're
okay.
talking about is a retention. We've already established that this is not a removal case because then
right.
your client would have had to have filed sometime after the original removal of the child from Ireland,
that
which didn't happen.
That was a temporary removal. The cases It's the last parental intent, where they both last
That's
agreed.
Not a fixed understanding under the Hague Convention of what it means to be habitually resident.
Well,
That's a proxy. It doesn't really apply here because we don't have any shared understanding.
The district court's opinion in this matter is a textbook model for how the Hague is meant to be applied and how it is meant to work.
I'm suggesting that there were some legal errors in the way that the district court approached this case in terms of what it
factual
fixed,
errors?
What it focused on as the appropriate date here
factual.
And what it means to, no, not factual errors, legal errors about what it means to retain a child unlawfully, how you choose the date, and what the appropriate legal test is.
With all due respect, it's determined based on the facts. The Hague case is not meant for a mother to fully litigate in Ireland, go back and forth, and then the day she finds out she's not happy with the Irish decree, go to Illinois, file here, and start all over again. That is anathema to what the Hague petition is all about.
The Hague Convention is just an anti-absconding treaty. It doesn't have to do with jurisdictional battles between countries or full faith and credit.
It has nothing to do with full faith and credit, but the court can take into consideration what happened in Ireland. It's required.
I get that, but it's just an anti-absconding statute to restore the status quo when someone, one parent or the other, disturbs
Actually, the Hague statute is that the custody case be tried where it is appropriate to be tried. That is the purpose of the Hague, and the case was tried in Ireland. And the Irish court said it should be tried in Ireland. And the U.S. court said it should go back to Ireland. That's precisely what the Hague petition is about.
I just want to make sure I have
sure.
these dates right. February 3rd, Mary takes him back to Ireland for the final custody hearing because the whole year and a half before that is pending before the court. Therapist and all these people are involved
Correct.
To make a determination.
Yes.
So she goes back. She mm-hmm. honors the order. There's a grant. The court grants him joint custody and orders that he remain. She asks for leave of court to return to the U.S. The court grants it. She gets back. She files almost immediately, a petition here in Illinois. The Irish court says that it was wrongful, like in May of 11, and then in 2 months later, the Illinois court denies her petition for custody and gives full faith and credit, and then we have him coming to the district court. So, you know, this is not something where she's really absconded. I mean, there's that one little brief period where they said it was wrongful for her to do it, but she sued in Illinois court. I'm just having trouble with what Judge Norgal characterized really as a long period of time when she had him improperly. And that's not what the record showed.
Well, what Judge Norgal was dealing with there is the habitual residence. And habitual residence for a very young child is not necessarily at all tied to how long a child has been in a particular place. If the child's been in Illinois for a long time, it's tied to the parents, the last shared intent of the parents.
No, but you have to look at the habitual residence, you have to look at the number of years the parents, the child was in a particular location, and here she had him legally here all that time.
That's a factor. The prevailing theme.
She had him here legally. It was just that one two-month period where she gets permission to bring him back, and then she files this petition for sole custody, and so we're talking about a period maybe from March to July could say she's.
It's a wrongful retention. She promised the court in Ireland where she participated. She promised, okay.
She promised she'd return March 30th.
Right, and the day after she was in violation of the order,
right.
That was the
a
wrongful
retention. Period, essentially.
But it's not it's wrongful retention. She was supposed to bring the child back based on her sworn promises to the court.
And you would say that outweighs the period of time that the child lived here in the U.S. illegally for purposes of determining the habitual
Also what outweighs
habitual
is
residence.
That for a very young child, this was the last, Ireland was the last place the parties mutually agreed to raise the child. These cases always come up when one of the parents disagrees and takes the child, and there can be some length after that. And this was a very young child. The case law is very clear on this, that with a very young child, the courts will look toward, in the Moses case, the courts will look toward parental intent, and that the court should be very slow in using other factors in changing the residence based on length of stay, that the focus should be on the parents. I mean, what this was, Mary, the Hague petition is specifically...
What this was Mary had him in the United States from November of 07 until March of, that would have been March of 11, legally and properly. She had him here.
Temporarily. The case
yeah,
is
but
adjusted.
I'm just saying it wasn't.
Yes, no, I understand.
It was legal.
He spent between that time. He spent 40% of his time in Ireland, between going back and forth, and between when he was born in November 2007, based on Judge Norgal's finding, he spent 40% of his time in Ireland. He was familiar with Ireland also. I just want to take a moment. I do have a motion.
Thank you very much, counsel.
Okay.
Court directs parties to file supplemental memoranda within 14 days after oral argument addressing the question whether this appeal is moot. The memoranda should also address the question whether we should hold this appeal for the Supreme Court's decision in Chafin.
Thank you.
When the memos have been received, the case will be taken under advisement.